Now, I've just taken a Vicodin, and so if I start rambling, it's because I'm completely out of my skull on drugs.
Well, I'll tell you, Simon, those are the most entertaining, okay? Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 81, End User Computing in a Virtual World. Here we go. Today my guest is Simon Bramfitt. How you doing, Simon?
I'm very well, thank you.
Hey, Simon, thanks so much for being on the podcast. You and I got to meet last week in Orlando at Live 360, a virtualization event, and also some other SharePoint, SQL, Visual Studio type people were there. And we hit it off, and it was nice to meet you there. Simon, you're pretty well known in the community, but could you give everyone kind of an intro of, you know, what kind of stuff you do?
Certainly. Well, I've been in end-user computing for an embarrassingly long time, right from the days of the very first IBM 5150 PCs, and at the time when end-user computing was delivered primarily via Sneakernet, that's walking the floors, carrying a bunch of
five and a quarter for the big ones.
Shall we start that again?
No, this is good stuff. Go for it.
5 1/4 inch floppies and doing everything by hand. Well before the days of computer viruses and well before the days of Windows. And I've kind of stuck with it pretty well ever since, developing some massive login scripts on, let's see, that would be NetWare 311 to manage Windows workstations, moving that forward through the discovery of Citrix and WinFrame, and eventually leaving the hands-on practice and moving into the rarefied atmosphere of being an industry analyst. And so most of my time today is spent advising enterprise customers on application delivery technologies, not just in the desktop world, but also to mobile devices, tablets, smartphones, and in some cases, even more rarefied devices than that.
Okay.
I also spend an awful lot of time working with some of the really interesting startups who have come into the industry in the last few years that have made many aspects of application delivery far more exciting, cheaper, faster, more flexible than you could perhaps even have imagined 5 years ago.
Awesome, awesome. And in the notes of the podcast, I'm going to put a link to your blog at blog.simonbramfitt.com. And if I remember correctly, you also are one of the contributors to the Virtualization Practice website.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
Although you've reminded me I'm kind of delinquent on writing anything for them this month.
Well, it's better to write good content when you have it than just write something because it's due.
That's true.
You know, so no, that's in fact the guys there at TVP. Those are excellent resources. I know Edward quite well, and no, it's a good group of people. Happy you're on the show, Edward, or on good group of people. Happy you're on the show, Simon. I was just talking to Tex Iwill today, so he was fresh on my mind. So Simon, you know, I think you know, and you and I were talking earlier. What kind of the way I see it, right, and there's a lot of devices, and I think it's fair to say you can do anything with any device and probably any platform for that matter today, especially when virtualization technologies come in, app virtualization, server vert, VDI, et cetera, et cetera. But what about some of the details like CPU processing in the data center or on the device, and network transfer displays, right? So how do those details come into some of the advice that you offer people?
One of the things that you learn very early on in this business is the only answer to anything is, well, it depends. So it depends. The way the industry is today, we've never had broader choice when it comes to getting applications in front of people. And the right answer in many respects is not just a technology one, which is the best solution to this problem, because there can be many equally viable ways of overcoming a problem. You've got to look into it in a much broader context than the piece of technology and try and understand the business, the drivers behind the business, its overall approach to delivering IT services, whether it's whether it's seen as just a cost of doing business or whether it's a fundamental means of distinguishing one business from its competitors. Then we start peeling back the layers of the onion, and there are these pieces of technology that come into play, and I guess the big wonder of the industry a few years ago was VDI, and it was touted as being the biggest thing ever. It was going to solve all of our desktop problems. We were going to put all of our desktops in the data center, and it got blown up completely out of proportion of its viable use cases. The real struggle, I think, that we have had with VDI has been based around storage. The very first implementations of VDI, we were seeing storage costs of a couple of thousand dollars per desktop, which is just for the storage, which is a completely ridiculous number. But for those early adopters in their specific use cases, it kind of made sense. But with that kind of cost, it's going to really limit your viable use cases for the technology. But over the last couple of years, the prices of storage in the VDI world have collapsed. Not because of any traditional market forces, but because of almost exclusively innovation in the way people have looked at the storage problem. Moving away from the big SAN architectures, where they were optimized for capacity rather than for throughput, and innovating in terms of the adoption of on-server SSD, flash cached, moving through into what we're gradually learning to call storage virtualization or storage hypervisors, stealing memory away from the server and using it as an ultra high performance RAM disk, if you will.
An ultra cache. Yeah.
And this is something that's completely turned the business on its head. I can steal memory away from my virtual machines and use it as storage. Front end that with very clever high performance inline compression and deduplication technologies, and the cost of storage collapses to tens of dollars per virtual desktop, bringing it right down to the same price as the hard drive in the physical desktop, while delivering all the benefits that VDI offers. It turns the market on its head.
Do you see people, searching for these new ways of computing, more for cost, more for security, more for management, or a combination of all of them and possibly other reasons?
All of the above, definitely. The big one is not an IT-centered concern. It really comes down to how consumerization of IT has re-educated the business into expecting service now.
Absolutely. That's definitely one thing we've all learned, even on the server side. We live in the must-have-it-now realm, and I'd even say that the desktop realm, and experience included, I'd even say that bar is set higher.
It's the server side is, forgive me if you're a server specialist, relatively easy. A server workload in the virtual world is this tightly coupled package of operating system and server application, whether that be SharePoint, web services, database services. It's a relatively simple thing to have to deal with. It's one tightly coupled relationship between a server hosted application and its operating system. And we can very easily decouple these from a physical device, move it into a virtual infrastructure, and then start gaining the benefits of server virtualization. In the desktop world, though, it's a hell of a lot more complicated. We're not dealing with an app sitting on an operating system. We're dealing with a user sitting on a stack of 5, 10, 20, 30 different applications, sitting on an operating system, sitting on a virtual infrastructure, where those applications change very frequently, where the underlying operating system is patched pretty well every week today. And if you think about it, you have not established this solid structure that you have with server virtualization. You've established an unstable pile of blocks, rather like playing a game of Jenga. And then you've got people throwing change at this unstable structure constantly, all the while expecting you to deliver this service cheaper, faster, better than you've ever done it before. It's not a nice place to be in.
Sure. Well, what about the operating system? You know, you've mentioned that a couple of times, and I live in a virtual world where I virtualize everything I can, possibly even including applications. Is the operating system kind of a component of diminishing importance as we look at some of the options today and going forward?
Ooh, that's a nasty question all by itself.
Love it. Because people care about the apps. That's what they do with their computer.
But yeah,
their handheld or their tablet.
Ultimately, you know, we get so many layers of abstraction around this, and the thing that the user cares about is their ability to do work. Nothing else is important. And then, in order to do work, people need information that is held in files and in databases, that is accessed through applications that sit on operating systems. We no longer know where that data is held. We no longer control what application is used to access it. And the application is frequently written for more than one operating system. So in some respects, you can say, yeah, the operating system's not as important as it used to be. But at the same time, for every application you have, it sits on an operating system. And for the vast majority of organizations, that operating system is managed by their IT department and it is no less relevant today than it ever was, and it will remain exactly in that same state until the very last application is fully abstracted from the operating system. You may be running 99% of your business on software as a service and web apps, cloud services, but if you've got one app that still needs Windows, Windows is 100% important to your environment. So I don't think it's fair to say that the operating system is less important than it ever was. It's just as important, but at the same time, so are three or four other different application delivery mechanisms.
Sure, sure. So I was thinking about this because I see a lot of options today to deploy applications server-side through appliances. And, you know, I'll give some of the new next-generation email options, right? There are a lot of these email server appliances you can deploy. And I take interest in them because in the VMware world especially, you see this as an option. And what I really think is going on here is that whoever makes this email app deploys this application running on an operating system, but it's more like a juice, a just enough OS, right? So you almost have this black box of an operating system that you can't control and manage like you could, say, a mainstream Windows, a mainstream Linux platform as an OS, server or desktop for that matter. So I think if I live in a world where I need to be mindful of controls and management, I almost may prefer the operating system still to be a stronger part. But if I don't, then maybe I find myself living in a world where I like this appliance and application-only model with effectively a Wild West of actual operating systems underneath. I mean, am I too far off on that thought?
No, I don't think so. There is an increasing level of abstraction in the way that we deal with individual services. If you look at the browser as a service, you know today what version of IE you're running on. IE9 most probably, 10 if you've moved to Windows 8 yet. But it's IE with a number attached to it. If you look at Google's Chrome browser, have you any idea what version of Chrome you're running?
Good point. I'm an Opera guy. It really doesn't matter, actually.
Chrome I choose as an example because I'm more familiar with it than Opera. I use Opera for compatibility checking, but that's all. But with Chrome, it updates itself. You never know that Google in the background is managing Chrome on your behalf. You could consider, in some respects, Chrome as a browsing appliance.
And if I, you know, I hate to pick on Google here, but that's the Google way. Have you seen the Google Lighting videos that Microsoft put out, where they pick on them for that very point that we might update it, you know, we might not tell you those types of things.
But then it's. Do you want to have control and responsibility, or do you want to have an expectation of service? Which is most important to you? With something like personal use of Chrome, very happy to have Google take responsibility for it. But with responsibility for the delivery of browser-based applications within the enterprise, I need to have absolute assurance that nobody's going to come along in the background and pull the rug out from underneath me and stop my enterprise apps that some fool wrote hard-coded dependencies into IE6 a decade ago, or whenever it was, and has forgotten about.
Well, this problem only happens with IE.
Well, not quite.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's by far the majority of that particular newer browser breaks old app. That is in my opinion, we see that mostly with IE, but you have
examples. You do, yes.
I haven't seen it with others, but...
It does happen. I have problems with using Chrome when I'm using Office 365. Now, you could say, well, that's just Microsoft playing games again. But there's nuance to this that always seems to come out in enterprise environments. And I have seen some really bizarre work done in the past where people have written applications to exploit bugs in device drivers. I'm not going to mention who was responsible for that, but I have seen it done to the extent that you are tied to a physical piece of hardware, never mind anything higher up the stack.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. But we work to overcome that. The appliance model is one way of overcoming that. Application virtualization in the FinApp AppV format is another way of doing that. Similarly, although, you know, specific to the VDI environment, we have... And to my acute embarrassment, the name has gone out of my mind at the wrong moment.
We'll edit this out. Are you thinking of like remote app or something?
No, I'm thinking of Unidesk.
Oh, their product.
Yeah, where they have an abstraction technique that works very well to overcome many of the Jenga block problems that I was talking about. And then we have organizations like Browsium, who have effectively created a new class of product, the Enterprise Browser Manager, that can act to overcome all of those nuances of browser compatibility, as well as extending way beyond that to address many of the malware issues that are present in applications, so that we can identify which components run with which enterprise applications and which can sit out in the cold.
That's interesting. I'm looking at Browsium's webpage. That looks really, really interesting.
This is one of these weird things. There's two really hot technologies at the moment that go a long way to address service assurance in an uncontrolled world. It's Browsium, who have created this Enterprise Browser Manager, which is becoming increasingly important in organizations that are moving to a greater percentage of web-delivered apps, as well as overcoming the headache of having to manage those applications that were delivered written with a dependency on IE6. And the other one, too easy to confuse, is Bromium. The organization that came out of the ZenSource team that went to Citrix, that have then moved on from Citrix and are exploring new avenues of virtualization to create effectively micro virtual machines that operate at the process level to provide, again, assurance of service and safety around applications that exist in a largely untrustworthy world.
So that's what Simon Crosby's been up to.
Yeah, it's one of the most interesting pieces of technology I have seen in a long time. Extremely valuable stuff. And it's going to in the fullness of time, I think, reshape the way we look at security. It's going to make technologies like the standard antivirus, anti-malware protection suites that we are lumbered with today. I'm reluctant to use the word irrelevant, but I can't think of a better one. In the long term, it will give us the opportunity to stop worrying about malware in the same way that we do today.
That's an interesting. You've really picked my brain here, both on Browsium and Bromium, and you're right; those are unfortunately similar names. That's just amazing stuff, as well as, you know, the details. These are details, right? These are things that go into the whole experience, and, you know, especially you go into the larger environments in the enterprise, right? These are the details that need to be considered. So, well, Simon, this has been an amazing conversation. In fact, I'm going to probably have to have you back because there's so much going on in this space, if you don't mind.
Well, I'd be delighted to. There are things happening in the IT world today that are really fundamentally changing the way we need to think of applications. We are starting to see the virtual workplace being talked about. This is something that I'm extremely interested in. I think it's going to be a profound change to the way we deal with information and applications in the future. There is a new term, workspace aggregators, coming into people's awareness. Citrix are in this place with their cloud gateway product. VMware are making noises with their Horizon platform. And then there's a UK company, Centric Software, that has, I think, got the best overall vision for this technology to date.
Well, cool. We're definitely going to have to talk more about this. I think that this is good. I do try to keep the podcasts short and light, usually around a 30-minute mark, but... yeah, we'll definitely have to get this back on and let me learn up a little bit. Simon, I'll have your links to your blog and your Twitter feed and, of course, virtualization practice. And do you do consulting as well?
Yeah, occasionally if I'm pressed.
If I'm pressed. Oh, I don't know. Might have to put your shoes on for that one. I don't know.
Well, you know, what I try to do more than anything else is help people uncover the right direction for their end user computing strategy. I will occasionally take it further than that and get into architecture. And to keep my feet on the ground, I try to do some hands-on consulting at least once a year. The problem with being an analyst is sometimes you forget what's actually happening in the real world. So I talk a lot about workspace virtualization, and very few people are really doing that yet. Yet I talk about it as though it's an everyday reality. So by getting back into the field and working side by side with people who are doing application delivery every day, I don't get too far into the future, and I'm aware of today's problems and tomorrow's opportunities.
Understood, Simon. And I'll also put a link to the EA website. I don't know how to pronounce that. How do you
IntelliKey Associates.
Okay, thank you. Love the font, by the way. It looks very Vimy. That's why I like it.
So. Yeah, it's one of these real cool things that have sprung up in the last few years is the ability to access talent anywhere in the world. The guy that designed that logo for me is based in the Philippines.
Oh, cool. Well, and they did a great job. Looks great. It's sharp. It's simple. That's what I like.
I'm very taken by it. And I'm very taken by the way that you can access talent anywhere in the world today. Develop relationships with people that you can walk past in the street without recognizing them.
Yep, yep. And now the real question is, will this be your first tattoo? No, don't answer. Nah. Simon, thank you so much for being on the podcast. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much indeed.